Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. This show will be first broadcast on Wednesday, July 5th, 2023 on 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host Ron Manizza. I'm coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprouts. You can also check out my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at Fran Storch ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on this show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. It's a neat time of year. I had some time off. I got to go to the Cape last week, which was really nice. So big shout out to my friends who let me use their house. I got to stay in Eastham. And Eastham is a great place to be if you're going to be on the Cape because it's way far out, but it's not quite P-Town, right? Where I was in Eastham was just south of the Wellfleet border and really close to Orleans. So I could ride my bike on the rail trail. I had to cross the Route 6 to get to the rail trail, but that was okay. It's really not far. And then I can get on the rail trail and 6 miles later, I'm in Orleans and I can go to the Hot Chocolate Sparrow. Woohoo. And then if I wanted to go north to Wellfleet, I could do that too. Of course, if you want to get to the good cafe in Wellfleet, you have to cross the highway and you have to climb some hills because there's hills in Wellfleet. You know there's hills in Wellfleet? Yeah, what's up with that?
There's hills on the Cape.
Yeah, there are hills on the Cape. There's not so much between Barnstable and Eastham, but once you get into Wellfleet, and especially if you get onto the left coast, the west coast, there's some hills. And so I got to climb some hills. And
that would
and
be known as Bayside out
the
there.
The Bayside. There's the Bayside and the Oceanside.
Right.
Gotcha.
You got it. There's the Atlantic and there's the Bay.
As you can tell, I am not originally from New England. I do know enough to say the Cape. And everybody knows that when you say the Cape, you mean Cape Cod. Who says Cape Cod? Everybody says the Cape. Because I said going to the Cape to my dad once, and he said, which Cape? You mean Cape Cod? Because in New Jersey, we have Cape May.
You do have Cape May.
Yeah. And Cape May is not like Cape Cod. It's different. It's nice. It's nice in a different way, though. That was a nice trip. I feel like being near the ocean is really good for me. That one of the things that I do is I find a nature that appeals to me. And being near the ocean really works for me. If I'm not feeling well, if I'm feeling stressed, and I get to spend some time, even if I'm not at the beach proper, if I'm anywhere near the beach, it's a great thing. And when I was on my bike, I would get off the trail and go down to the beach and just look at the water and take pictures and stuff. So that was really nice. So I had a lovely time. I had good coffee, had good pastries. I went to Provincetown and walked around and saw the sights and took some photos there and got fudge and, you know, did things I like to do. So I was very happy about that. And I'm still off, and next weekend I'm going to go see my sister and her, and my brother-in-law, and today's their anniversary. So 1993, it's their, is that 30 years or 40 years? 93.
You're asking the math
93,
guy
03, to do math. 13. It's 30 years. They've been married 30 years today. It's the 30th anniversary. So happy anniversary, Nancy and Abraham. Woohoo. So we'll go see them, and her birthday is a week from today. So my sister's birthday is a week from her anniversary. So you always celebrate both together. Then you go jump in the pool and it's good. Need hot dogs. All right. Make sure the hot dogs have no nitrates, right? All right. And then, of course, tomorrow is a special day. What's that? It's the birthday of America. So Ron and I have some fun stuff planned. In Willimantic, Connecticut, they have the Boombox Parade every year. And we've been going. I don't know that I've missed a Boombox Parade except for the year they didn't have it because of COVID. But I've gone every year since 2001. Isn't that amazing? And so we're going tomorrow and we're going to do bicycle advocacy stuff and, you know, be on bikes and pull trailers and like that. So that'll be fun. And get to see everybody in Willimantic. And what's really cool is that our governor, Ned Lamont, and one of our senators, Richard Blumenthal, they march in the parade and then they stand at the end of the parade and greet people. And you can go talk to them about whatever you want. And they're very nice and they're very personable. And Governor Ned is kind of a fun guy. He likes to dance around and play, and he will get up on the Shaboo stage and sing if you want to. Richards doesn't quite do that, but he is very personable. And I find that when I talk to him, he's not just Joe politician. He's actually talks to you from the heart. So I really appreciate that. And Mae Flexer will be there because she's always there. She's our state senator. Is that what she is? Yeah. So Mae Flexer, she rocks. She's a millennial who made good. Yeah. So she's a younger woman with kids, and she's a state senator, and I admire her a lot. She's a smart lady, and we appreciate her. So I get to see all those people tomorrow.
And she has a little Mae.
She has a little Mae.
Yeah. Have you seen little Mae yet?
There's a little Mae. She's had the little Mae for a few years. The little Mae must be getting older.
She looks like Mae.
Now she's getting super cute. She's a mini Mae.
She's a mini Mae. Right. Mini Mae.
Oh. Gosh. So my mom scared the you-know-what out of us. It was very exciting. She had chest pain. And I was texting with her friend who looks after her down in Florida. And we were waiting for the results of result after result after result while she was in the hospital. And I said I was sitting on tenterhooks. And then I was like, what's a tenterhook anyway? And I realized we have some. I think this is a tenterhook. So if you're on Facebook Live or IG Live, you can see that I'm holding a tenterhook, or what I think is a tenterhook. Anyway, a tenterhook is something that you can hook up fabric with. So I think this is one. And you wouldn't want to sit on this. So if you felt like you were sitting on them, you would be pretty uncomfortable. So when you're waiting for results, you feel like you're sitting on tenterhooks. You may also have spilkes, which means in Yiddish that you're very anxious or excited and impatient waiting for results. And thank God my mom's chest pain turned out to be another Jewish word, bupkis, which you may have heard of that TV show. Bupkis means nothing. So thank goodness for that. She has a perfect ejection fraction. She has, she doesn't have atherosclerosis as far as they could tell. She passed her nuclear stress test. So whatever she had for the chest pain, it was not cardiovascular and is probably not pulmonary either. Her lungs were clear. So it could be GI and it could be musculoskeletal. When you say it's stress and it's chest pain, it's what it is, what it directly is musculoskeletal, because you're tensing up and then you have pain in the muscles of your accessory muscles of breathing. That's basically what's going on. Or you could have pain in your diaphragm. You could have pain in the muscles in front. She has some spinal stenosis, so she may have been holding herself in such a way that ultimately she got pain in her abdominal muscle. So that's possibly what it is. So anyway, she has to get more tests done. It might be GI, and if it's GI, it's probably nothing serious. But anyway, so what I'm going to do in the next week or so is we'll do a breakdown of chest pain. When somebody's having chest pain, what do you do? What's the right thing to do? And I'll tell you right now, if you are having chest pain and you don't know what it is and you've taken an antacid and nothing happens and it's not going away, your first call is to the ER. You go right to the ER because it could be a heart attack. And if it's a heart attack, time is tissue. And the sooner you get there, the more tissue that they can preserve. And if you can't get there quickly, get the ambulance, because they can work on you in the ambulance. It's worth it to do. And if you have, so chest pain can be weird in women. It can present in strange ways. So it could be a little off to the side. It could be not, when it's on your chest, the front of your chest, it's called precordial. Precordial means it's behind the heart. It might not be there. It might be a little bit lower. It might be shifted to the right or to the left. But if it's there, it hurts and it won't go away, get yourself to the ER. If it's even lower and it won't go away, you're having an acute abdomen. Acute abdomen is a medical emergency too, because it could be so many things. And unless they're a jerk at the ER, nobody is going to tell you at the ER, why did you come? You don't have anything. Nobody's going to say that to you. Anybody at the ER is going to say to you, you did the right thing. And then they're going to work you up and they're going to figure out what's actually going on. So that's the smartest thing to do. And, you know, I'm a naturopathic physician and I believe in natural medicine, but I also believe in emergency medicine. And my practice of naturopathic medicine doesn't mean we never go to the ER and we never access conventional medicine. It means that my expertise is in natural medicine, and that when somebody needs conventional medicine, I refer them and I work with doctors who are conventional doctors. And I've gotten the respect of a bunch of, you know, conventional doctors in this area, because I refer a lot and I write nice referral letters. I send them information. I say, here, this is my patient. She's got this going on. get her worked up. Let's find out what's going on. And thank you so much for collaborating with me. You know, so I do a lot of that. So anyway, mom's okay. She's home. She's home with Nico the dog, and we're grateful. And in a week or so, I'll talk to you about how to, when you have chest pain, what the process is and what it might be and what the steps are. So we'll go through that. All right. So this week I wanted to start by talking about blood pressure. So here's ways to lower blood pressure. So there are things you can do at home for managing blood pressure. So what is high blood pressure? High blood pressure is generally thought of as normal blood pressure is thought to be 120 over 80. What is blood pressure? Do you know what blood pressure is?
It's the amount of pressure inside of your heart that's pushing through your veins and your arteries.
Yeah, pretty much.
Right.
Okay. So
how's
you have, that's pretty good. So blood pressure, so for example, if you're talking about normal blood pressure, 120 over 80, the 120 is your systolic blood pressure, and your systolic blood pressure is the pressure which your left ventricle, which is the biggest chamber in your heart, pushes blood into your aorta to go through your whole body. That's the systolic blood pressure. And that number is higher than the bottom number, which is the diastolic pressure. It needs to be higher because you need a lot of force to get the blood into your whole body. All right. Then you have the diastolic blood pressure, which is the filling pressure. So when the aortic valve, the valve between the left ventricle and the aorta is the first blood vessel that comes out of the left ventricle. When that valve closes, it's the pressure at which that left ventricle fills up. And you don't want that to be too high because it puts strain and pressure on that left ventricle, and the left ventricle can hypertrophy and become stiff and not function well. If you have high blood pressure, you are at risk of getting congestive heart failure. And when you have congestive heart failure, your heart doesn't push blood out to your whole body at a rate that it's supposed to. So that is what blood pressure is. If your blood pressure is too high, you run the risk of a bunch of things. One of the things you have the risk of is now you have turbulent blood flow. When you have turbulent blood flow, it's like, you know, we talk about, you know, the difference between a very calm river or brook where the water's going through at a very gentle rate. And because it's going so gently, it sort of rolls over the rocks and the sides of the banks. Whenever you have blood or water going through a brook or blood going through a vessel, you're going to get some erosion of the blood vessel, but our bodies have a way of repairing that. And if the repairing is gentle and slow, then nothing bad's going to happen. You're not going to get blockages in your arteries. But as you know, if you have a roaring brook that is cascading over rocks in the sides of the brook, there's going to be erosion, that the force of the water is going to eat away at the sides of the brook. And the water is also going to smooth out the rocks, because water pressure will just take, it grabs molecules. It takes away sand particles and molecules, and now you get smooth rocks. So if that's happening in your blood vessels, you have blood beating against the sides of the walls of your arteries. One of the things you got going on is you have erosion of the blood vessels, and then your body's going to look at that and go, "Oh my goodness, we have to fix that." And so it's going to send things like platelets and calcium and cholesterol to the site to patch it up. And if it gets patched up too much, what do you get? You get blockages in the arteries. So that's one of the reasons you don't want high blood pressure. You don't want high blood pressure because if you have too much blood pressure going through, it can create atherosclerosis. The other thing it can create is aneurysms. An aneurysm is when you have a blood vessel and part of the blood vessel loses tone. So you get a bulgy spot, like after you blew up a balloon and now the balloon is kind of slack. So you have a slack place in your blood vessel, and then so it thins out. And so if too much pressure hits that aneurysmal spot, it can break. So an aneurysm isn't as bad as a ruptured aneurysm, and you don't want to have a ruptured aneurysm, because now you have bleeding, you're going to bleed out into your body and you can lose your blood, and it can be life-threatening. So you can get aneurysms from turbulent blood flow. You can get aneurysms because you have atherosclerosis that's pushing on the sides of the blood vessel wall and makes it pooch out. And then if you have high blood pressure on top of that, then you're more likely to get pressure there and the aneurysm can break. And so the high blood pressure can cause an aneurysm to rupture in your abdominal aorta, in your aorta anywhere. It can cause ruptures in your brain. So you can get high pressure into the brain and then you get aneurysms there. You can get atherosclerosis in the circle of Willis, which is the circle of arteries that feed the brain. And then you can get aneurysms there. And if you get too much pressure there, you can get a rupture there as well. So you're more at risk for getting strokes. And the other thing you can get is congestive heart failure because you have too much pressure against the heart muscle wall and the heart muscle will ultimately thicken and weaken and not be able to push blood to the rest of your body. So you don't want to have high blood pressure. You want your blood pressure to be mostly calm. You want to get you want the blood pressure to be at a level so it feeds all of your organs. It shouldn't be too low either because then you don't get enough pressure, especially going upward when you stand up into your brain and then you can feel lightheaded and dizzy. So that's no good either. Now, the interesting thing is when you are moving and exercising, your systolic pressure goes up. Your diastolic pressure does not, but your systolic pressure goes up because we need a higher level of blood going to the entire body if we're trying to climb Tower Hill, which I did today. Yeah, it was very exciting. climb Tower Hill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That'll raise your blood pressure.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
It'll raise a lot of things.
I climbed Bicknell and then I went down Bebbington and then I climbed Tower Hill and then I went down Federal and, Bedlam.
Right.
Okay.
Nice descent.
Oh, I did a lot of fun descending today.
Yeah.
Yes, I did. A lot of fun climbing. I paid for it with a lot of, in order to descend in a fun way, you must climb. So that's kind of how it goes. All right. Anyway, so you want your blood pressure to be in that sweet spot, high enough so you get to do the things you want to do or that you need to do in your life, and low enough that it doesn't cause damage to your body. That's the whole point. So high blood pressure is known as the silent killer because it doesn't necessarily cause symptoms until there's a lot of damage done to the heart. People are often unaware that they have high blood pressure. So what are home things you can do at home to lower your blood pressure? One of them is you got to move. You got to move.
Really got to move. I was going to say sit still on the couch. That's just not going to work though.
Well, sitting still on the couch, you have to do that too.
It'll keep your blood pressure low at that moment.
Right. Well, right. It's interesting because you need to get exercise and you also need to rest. Both of those will lower your blood pressure. Isn't that crazy?
It is.
It seems paradoxical, but it really isn't when you understand how it all works. All right. So being active, it helps to lower blood pressure. It helps your mood. It helps your strength and balance and lowers your risk of diabetes. So if you have diabetes, you're going to more like that risk for high blood pressure simply because when you have too much sugar in your blood, you're going to make more fat in your blood. You're going to make more cholesterol and you're going to have more substance to create the atherosclerosis. So when you have high blood pressure, when you get physical exercise, you reduce your risk of diabetes because you're making yourself more insulin sensitive and you're burning up the sugar that's in your blood vessels, that's in your blood. So if getting into exercise, you want to talk to your doctor about what would be safe for you and what's the best exercise for you.
The one you'll do.
You got it. So whatever it is that you'll do, you can go outside, you can work out inside your home, you can go to a gym, you can go dancing. There, anything at all to get moving is going to help you. It's because when you get exercise, it exercises the blood vessels. It raises your HDL because the HDL is going to keep your blood vessels clear. By the way, atherosclerosis itself, getting atherosclerosis can raise your blood pressure because now you have turbulent blood flow going around the atherosclerosis. So you can get atherosclerosis from having high blood pressure, and you can get high blood pressure from having atherosclerosis.
Okay.
Isn't that fun?
Mm.
Not really.
But I didn't really have high blood pressure.
No, you didn't. No. That you had.
Your mom does.
Yes, but she doesn't have atherosclerosis.
Right.
But, and it just shows you, goes to show you that genetics are different. So anyway, getting exercise makes your blood vessels more elastic. It makes it so that they can handle more pressure going through in a healthy way. And it raises your HDL, and HDL is your high-density lipoprotein. That runs around and collects cholesterol out of your circulation, so you're less likely to get atherosclerotic plaques. If you use your blood vessels to send blood through them, it's a use-it-or-lose-it phenomenon. If you use them for what they are intended for, then they will continue to work better. That's how blood vessels work. If you lie around too much, you don't have as many blood vessels. The other thing that happens with blood vessels is what happened to Ron, and one of the reasons we didn't lose Ron, even though he had major atherosclerosis of his major coronary arteries, including the left anterior descending, because he made collateral circulation. Everybody who gets regular cardio exercise makes collateral circulation. I have collateral. You know how I know that? Because Anna McIntosh told me.
Okay.
May she rest in peace.
All right, then.
Anna McIntosh was a naturopathic physician, and she taught at the National College of Naturopathic Medicine when it was still called NCNM, and she taught me, like, everything. She taught, and the reason I know about the turbulent blood flow, and I know these various things, is because she taught biochemistry, and she taught physiology, and she taught many, many classes, and so there are a lot of things that we got to know because of Anna McIntosh. So you also want to do some strength training activity, and that increases your muscle mass. It increases your lean muscle mass, so it doesn't take as much energy for you to get circulation going in your body, that you have the benefit of muscle mass doing activity for you. So exercise helps you to lower your blood pressure. The American Heart Association recommends the DASH diet. So DASH stands for Dietary Approaches to Stop Hypertension. And so it's basically the Mediterranean diet, I mean, roughly. They want you to eat a lot of, guess what, vegetables and fruit. They also say whole grain. So if you can eat some grain, it should be whole. And some people do well with whole grains. If you have a blood sugar issue, you might not do so great with grains at all, or you have to do very little bits. I think you should eat more vegetable. The most thing you should eat the most of is vegetables, followed by fruit, followed by whole grains. That you want to do whole grains is not huge quantities. Like having a large bowl of oatmeal in the morning is not ideal. Having a smaller bowl of oatmeal with nuts and seeds and fruit in it, that's a good idea. And they recommend low-fat dairy products because they are still back on saturated fat is bad for your cholesterol. And they tell you to eat lean meats, fish, and nuts. Now, if you eat the Mediterranean diet, they do eat a little bit of cheese, but they don't pound cheese. They don't have cheese as their protein source. They use cheese as a garnish. And if your cholesterol isn't particularly high, you can do that too, and if you don't have a dairy intolerance. So, and then the DASH diet recommends low-fat dairy because they're trying to get you to stay away from the saturated fat. That will probably lower your cholesterol, especially if you're a cholesterol hyperproducer, but it won't necessarily. I mean, the main thing that raises your cholesterol is starch and sugar, too much starch and sugar, especially if it's refined. And that's why they recommend lean meats, though that means leaner cuts of beef and chicken breast and fish in general, and then nuts and seeds. And they specifically say eliminating saturated fats. And they recommend no processed foods, high-fat dairy products, and fatty meats. That'll probably work for you. It may not be necessary to do that. The big thing that really raises your blood pressure and cholesterol is starch and sugar, more so than fatty meats. Like if you get a cut of meat that's fatty, but it's completely grass-fed and finished, it's probably not going to give you high cholesterol. Now, if you have one of your blood values, your TMAO, your trimethylamino oxide, if that is elevated, then you do stay away from dairy and beef because those will raise, and that doesn't have to do with the fat. That has to do with the proteins that cause you to raise that TMAO. One of the things is limit salt. So limiting salt is controversial because some people need to limit salt and others don't. You shouldn't have an absolutely low salt diet. You do need some salt in your diet to replace fluid. Like if you're exercising a lot, you need some salt. But some people go on a diet that's too low in salt, and then they don't feel well, and they don't feel well because they're not getting their they're not able to absorb the water, and they're not that they become effectively dehydrated. So you have to be careful of that. If you know that you have salt-sensitive hypertension and you eat something that's extremely salty, like you have a piece of pizza and you blow up like a balloon, all right, so don't do that. but if you have a great big salad with lots of vegetables in it and a little bit of fruit and nuts and seeds and a piece of fish with that, and you sprinkle a little bit of salt onto that, just pay attention to whether you swell, whether your fingers swell or your feet swell. And if that's not happening, then have the salt. It's too much salt that's the problem. And when you talk about salt in terms of hypertension and in terms of blood pressure, you're talking about when people eat a standard American diet or a standard North American diet, because they do it in Canada too, they eat a lot of processed food. And processed food can have excessive salt in it. And if they eat the processed food to the exclusion of lots of fruits and vegetables, which has a lot of potassium in it and calcium and magnesium, things that can calm your blood pressure, then if your ratio of salt to calming minerals, calcium, potassium, magnesium, is too high, that's probably going to affect your blood pressure. But if you eat lots of fruits and vegetables and drink a lot of water and have a little bit of salt on your salad or on your vegetables or on your meat, and it's not excessively salty, that's probably okay. I mean, I eat some salty food, and I've been able to get my blood pressure down just from, some supplements that I take and just eating a lot of fruits and vegetables and nuts and seeds and making sure I have a lot of fiber in my diet and drinking a lot of this stuff. I'm going to drink some now. Shout out to my stepson and his partner for bringing me this nice glass, which came from Illinois. I wanted them to get me a Chicago glass, but they didn't like the Chicago glasses. So they got me this pretty one, which I think is a Lake Michigan glass, which I really appreciate. Okay. And it's a very nice glass. It's just the right size and good for drinking water or iced tea or whatever you might like. My little shot of smoothie in the morning. Okay, so it depends on who you ask. The American Heart Association wants you to keep your salt between 1,500 and 2,300 milligrams a day, which is a little over a half teaspoon. So you can also remember that you can add herbs and spices to your food, and herbs and spices have beneficial effects on your diet. They can lower blood pressure. They can kill microorganisms. They can help your mood. They have a lot of good properties to them. Then you don't necessarily have to use as much salt. Don't rely on salt to be the only flavor that you eat. Okay. Then maintain a moderate weight. If your weight is too high, you're going to tend to have higher blood pressure just because you need more circulation to get your blood all over your body. By the way, that is not always true. I have people in my practice who are at a very high, have a very high BMI that they, they're considered to be in varying levels of obese, and they have normal blood pressure or even low to normal blood pressure. I have other patients who are normal size. They are not overweight or obese, and they have high blood pressure. So it really depends. There's definitely a genetic component to it. There's an emotional component to it. There's a stress component to it. Some people, no matter how stressed they are, no matter how overweight they are, no matter what they eat, they just don't get high blood pressure. They probably have very resilient blood vessels. That's probably why. Because I have my patients who, they're coming to see me regularly because they have, serious inflammatory conditions. They have stuff going on in their bodies. They just don't have high blood pressure. And every time I measure them, and I'm jealous because, if I'm not careful, my blood pressure goes up. And I'm treating my blood pressure, so is my sister, so is my mother. So we definitely have a genetic component. And we definitely have a nervous glialia component, too.
No.
Yeah.
I never noticed.
Yeah. If you smoke, it's not good for you to smoke. Did you know that? If you smoke, it might raise your blood pressure.
No kidding.
When you actually smoke a cigarette, your blood pressure goes up just from smoking that one cigarette for a few minutes. And if you smoke regularly, your blood pressure will stay elevated. For lots of reasons, the nicotine itself raises your blood pressure. It's a pharmacological effect of the nicotine. And then when you smoke cigarettes, you're basically polluting your lungs. You have fine particulates, you have toxic chemicals, you have heavy metals, and all of these things are damaging to your blood vessels. And what happens when you damage your blood vessels? Your body wants to repair them. So you use cholesterol, calcium, and platelets to repair your blood vessels, and then you get atherosclerosis. So, of course, you're at greater risk of cardiovascular disease when you smoke cigarettes. Absolutely. When you're in your higher risk of heart attack and stroke and high blood pressure when you smoke cigarettes. And secondhand smoke can also put you at risk of increased risk of high blood pressure. And if your secondhand smoke is bad enough, the problem with secondhand smoke is that you're getting the smoke without filters. So if you get enough secondhand smoke, it can increase your risk of high blood pressure, stroke, and heart attack.
How about smoking Canadian wildfires?
Yeah. So that's unfortunately true. Air quality. Air quality has become a huge problem. We have these Canadian wildfires right now, and they're sending the winds are sending smoke down our way. Mm-hmm. Does air quality increase your risk of cardiovascular disease and respiratory illness? Yes, it does, unfortunately. So if there is a bad air quality alert, you may want to reconsider spending time outside, especially doing cardio exercise outside, which is awful because this is the time of year when we want to be outside. And we've been having rain off and on, and when you get a good day, you want to be out there. And then we get these air quality alerts. So we had an air quality alert on Saturday when we were having our big Thread City Cyclers ride, and we made a decision to go out because the air quality alert was saying that it was in the red zone, but when you overlaid the map over our area, we were in the orange to yellow zone, which is only, it's more concerning for people who already have problems. And the direction that we were traveling due east into the woods, into a very rural area. And the overlay map turned green as we were going in that direction, probably because it's away from the cities, it's away from pollution, and there's a lot of trees in the area, and trees will pull particulates out of the air for you. They'll pull particulates and they put more oxygen into the air. So we were okay, you know. So you have to rethink doing exercise. I think today's air quality alert was okay for our area. But yes, air quality alerts, that kind of smoke can increase your risk of high blood pressure and atherosclerosis and pulmonary disease like asthma and chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. You bet. Emphysema, et cetera. So quitting smoking can help your blood pressure return to normal. Did you know that alcohol, if you do too much alcohol, that can raise your blood pressure? There's controversy about whether alcohol's good for you or not. One day you hear that no amount of alcohol is good for you, and then another day you hear that people who drink alcohol have better health parameters.
Right. What about all those, octogenarians, the 100-year-old people an ounce of alcohol a day?
Yeah. Well, if you are having an ounce of alcohol a day and your health is fantastic, have an ounce of alcohol a day. If you have a health condition that is negatively impacted by alcohol, then maybe you shouldn't have it. So if you have breast cancer, it's not a good idea to drink alcohol every day. If you have any kind of cancer, it's not a good idea to have alcohol every single day. If you have high blood pressure, if cardiovascular disease, if you have anything going on in your body that can be impacted by alcohol, it's a good idea to cut back. I mean, I allow myself to drink as much as I want, because as much as I want is, hey, maybe I'll have a glass of wine today. I have the glass of wine and then I don't have another one for 3 weeks. So I'm allowed to drink.
Yeah.
Because I just forget about it. But it's going to be the 4th of July tomorrow, so maybe I'll have something.
Maybe you should.
Yeah, all right.
There you go.
Or maybe I'll have one tonight. I don't know. We'll see.
You know.
I have that nice wine in the fridge.
Yeah.
There you go. But drinking alcohol, if your blood pressure is high and you keep drinking, it will raise your blood pressure more. Now, why might that be? Well, there's a few reasons. One is that you're taxing your liver. Your liver is going to prioritize removing the alcohol from your system, and it's not going to be as available to make neurotransmitters, to manage your hormones. It's not going to be as available to manage your nutrients, your macronutrients, your proteins, carbohydrates, and fats. And so it's going to be busy processing that alcohol. And when it processes the alcohol, there are intermediaries before it turns into carbon dioxide and water that are toxic, like the aldehydes. And the aldehydes have free radical liability. Anything with free radical liability can be damaging to blood vessels. So there's that trouble. You have to have enough alcohol dehydrogenase to break down the alcohol. Otherwise, alcohol breaks down in your system and it has oxidative capacity. And the oxidative capacity will damage your blood vessels and it can raise your blood pressure. When you drink alcohol too, too much alcohol will raise your triglycerides. Now you're in a blood fat situation. Once you're in a high oxidized cholesterol situation, then you have damage to blood vessels. Off you go to cardiovascular disease, right? The other thing is alcohol is taxing to your B vitamins. It requires a lot of B vitamins for detoxification. What else do you need B vitamins for? To manage your neurotransmitters. So you need to be able to metabolize your dopamine, your norepinephrine, your serotonin. And when those are out of balance, you're going to be more stressed. You're going to have higher catecholamines, your norepinephrine and your cortisol. And when you're under more stress, guess what? More sugar goes into your blood and then you start the the cholesterol and atherosclerosis track again. So alcohol raises and B vitamins keep your nerves calmer. And one of the ways they keep your nerves calmer is through managing your neurotransmitters, managing nerve transmission. Your nerve transmission is going to happen more readily, evenly, and calmly in the presence of B vitamins. If you're using all your B vitamins to detoxify your alcohol, they're not going to be as available to calm your nerves. All right, stress all by itself. There's a shock. Stress raises your blood pressure. Of course it does, because if you're in fight or flight, your body's going to send your blood pressure up. So you have enough pressure in your musculoskeletal system and your cardiovascular system and your pulmonary system so that you can run away from the bear. So if you calm yourself and you reduce stress, it can lower your blood pressure because you're going to spend more time in a lower cortisol environment. If you train your vagus nerve to be more healthy and available, your vagus nerve is going to tend to keep things calm in your body and it's going to tend to keep your blood pressure down. And so doing things, we're taking stressful elements out of your life, like working less or working smarter or getting more rest, or if there are stressful situations in your life, mitigating them or getting out of them, or just doing stress-reducing activities, doing activities like deep breathing that lowers cortisol. That's going to lower your blood pressure too. So all of those things can be helpful. So those are some home things you can do to help to lower your blood pressure. All right, so let's talk about one of my favorite herbs, and that's hawthorn, a thing that I take to help keep my blood pressure down. I love hawthorn. Hawthorn is a very impressive herb. They grow on trees. They grow on a hawthorn tree. And I grew up on Hawthorn Lane when I was a kid and in East Windsor, New Jersey. And now I live on Bassett's Bridge Road, and there is a Hawthorn Lane spelled the same way with an E at the end, which is not how the plant is spelled. That's spelled the author, Nathaniel Hawthorne, he had an E at the end of his name. So Hawthorn Lane, about a mile and a half from my house. I cannot believe it that I landed on a road that had a Hawthorn Lane on it. It makes me feel very, it'd be saying Jewish Hamisha, very homey here. So Hawthorn Lane off of Bassett's Bridge. Imagine if there was an Avery Hill Road off Bassett's Bridge Road. Wouldn't that be cool?
Mm.
Yeah. It doesn't impress you as much.
No.
But Hawthorn Lane to me is comforting because my Hawthorn Lane in East Windsor, New Jersey is miles and miles away. It's hundreds of miles away. So anyway, So Hawthorn berry, they have berries, and they're tart, they're tangy, and they're a little astringent. They're slightly sweet too. They can be yellow and they can be dark red and anywhere in between. They've been used as an herbal remedy for hundreds of years for heart issues, digestive problems, hypertension. Maybe this is thousands of years. It's been in Chinese medicine since like 659 CE. It's full of antioxidants, has a lot of polyphenols. Those are antioxidants that are found in plants. And antioxidants help to neutralize unstable molecules in your body that can, remember we're talking about the free radicals that can damage your blood vessels, that the polyphenols can help to prevent those from bothering you. You can get free radicals from foods, from pollution, from environmental pollution, from cigarette smoke. And when you have more antioxidants on board, that mitigates that damage. The polyphenols can help to protect you against certain cancers, also from diabetes, from asthma, heart problems, infection, and also when you have a lot of antioxidants born, you have nice skin. So the big thing is the polyphenols. It also may be anti-inflammatory, and that chronic inflammation is linked to cardiovascular disease, high blood pressure, asthma, and some cancers. Hawthorn berry extract was found in mice to decrease levels of certain inflammatory compounds, and it was protective to the liver. And there's a compound in hawthorn called vitexin, which is in the leaves. And they gave vitexin to mice with respiratory conditions, and it decreased the protection of inflammatory molecules. So those are very promising results. And hawthorn may directly lower blood pressure. Hawthorn it can act as a vasodilator. It can relax constricted blood vessels. There was a 10-week study in 36 people with mildly elevated blood pressure, and they found that taking a certain amount of it lowered their blood pressure. And there was another study with 1,200 milligrams of given to people with type 2 diabetes, and the ones who took the hawthorn had better blood pressure than the ones who did not. Wow. Hawthorn may reduce your blood cholesterol levels. If you have imbalanced blood cholesterol, of course, especially if you have high triglycerides and low HDL, you're more likely to get atherosclerosis. So there was a mouse study that showed that hawthorn extract can lower your total cholesterol and also your LDL, and also have an impact on your triglyceride levels. So that's helpful too. There's a few studies that showed that it lowers triglycerides, so that's nice. They did a 6-month study in some people with atherosclerosis, and they found that the hawthorn berry significantly reduced the thickness of plaque in the carotid arteries. So that's interesting. And just for, you know, for whatever this might be useful. I had a carotid Doppler last year, and I've been taking hawthorn solid extract for a number of years to help with my blood pressure and, you know, to protect my heart and stuff. I have absolutely no plaque in my carotid arteries.
Right? Mm, yeah. What's with that?
I don't know if it's the hawthorn or it's genetics or what, but it's probably helping. Hawthorn can help your digestion. So that's nice, because it's anti-inflammatory. The berries have fiber in them, so they help you with constipation, which means if they have fiber in them, they're going to help with your microbiome. They're going to help you have good gut bacteria. They found that with each additional gram of dietary fiber, it's associated with a 30-minute decrease in the time between bowel movements. So if you take hawthorn, you'll be more regular. There was a rat study that showed that hawthorn extract reduces your gut transit time. So you will, again, you'll be more regular if you take hawthorn, which is a nice thing. Also, hawthorn may be helpful in the production and activity of digestive enzymes. So if you have any kind of sluggish digestion, you don't make enzymes, you have a lot of gas and bloating, you can use hawthorn and that can be helpful. Hawthorn may help you with premature skin aging because of collagen degradation. Why? Probably because of the antioxidants. And so if you, there was a study where they mixed hawthorn and ginseng extract, and it helped to inhibit wrinkle formation, increase skin moisture. So maybe that's why I have nice skin. I don't know if this nice skin is because of the nice filters on the IG and the, because I look very youthful on the Facebook Live and on the Instagram Live. And, you know, I don't think my skin really looks like this. I think it's enhancing me a little bit, but it does look pretty good. You know, for, I'm going to be 60 this year. Be 60 this year. Is that crazy?
Ugh.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, we're going to
have You're just a puppy.
I know. We're going to have our 42nd. Oh, it's our 42nd. We didn't have our 40th high school reunion because it was during the pandemic, because we graduated in 81. So we were going to do it in 21 and didn't work. So I guess maybe it's 41. I don't know. So anyway, so I guess it's our, maybe it's not our 42nd, it's our 41st, but it's our 60. We're going to all turn 60 this year, or most of us are, or if we haven't already. Hmm. So it's our 60-year-old high school reunion. So that'll be exciting. All right. Did you know that you think I'm calmer since I've been working on my health, right?
Yeah.
You think it's mostly the yoga, though?
Oh, yeah.
Well, it's also the hawthorn.
Okay.
It says so, right?
Well,
here.
It says so. That's right.
So let's see.
I say it's the yoga.
Hawthorn and magnesium and California poppy. Well, California poppy, that'll calm me down. I don't want to do the California poppy. I think that I took too much stuff that chilled me out and I had to back off on it. Because it's possibly the combination of hawthorn, all these GABA enhancing things I was taking, like theanine, L-theanine and taurine and glycine. I was taking a bunch of these things and I was starting to wake up feeling depressed. And I was taking a heart supplement that had Rauwolfia in it, which is a general neurotransmitter calmer. And it was too much. And add that to the regular practice of yoga, which is calming me down a lot. It was too much. And I had to back off. I don't want to stop doing the yoga, but I would rather stop taking pills and just keep doing yoga. That you know, and going outside and going and being in the woods and doing those kinds of things rather than taking a pill, obviously. So I mean, you know, of course, if my patients come in and they buy supplements from me, I make money. But if my patient gets better and then they don't need a supplement anymore, I celebrate that. Because I'd rather people needed less stuff and they were able to have a happy, healthy lifestyle just by living a happy, healthy lifestyle, not having to take a pill. Even if the pill is magnesium, it's fine. So I'd rather find ways around that. As it turns out, enough people need to take supplements and feel better on the supplements that they keep taking them. So we're okay. So it's fine there. And, you know, adding herbs into your diet can be really helpful because it helps your blood pressure. It's helpful for a lot of things. But hawthorn helps, it helps with anxiety. And I'm trying to see here where, how it would help with that. And I have to wonder, I don't know if it works on, it doesn't say here if it works on neurotransmitters. My thought is because it's definitely a blood vessel enhancer. It's the polyphenols strengthen your blood vessels. It has anthocyanins in it too that strengthen your blood vessels. If you have stronger blood vessels, you have better circulation. When you have better circulation, you have better mood. When you have better circulation to your brain, you tend to have a better mood. So it may be directly circulatory. Hawthorn can be used to help treat congestive heart failure. Because hawthorn, the polyphenols cause the heart to be stronger. It's what's known as a positive inotrope. And what that means is that when you take hawthorn, it strengthens the heart muscle such that with each beat, you push more blood out of your heart. It improves your ejection fraction. So by the way, my mother's very proud of it. She said, the nurse told me I have an ejection fraction. She said excitation fraction. She didn't know. She said, I have an ejection fraction of 65 to 75%. Do you know what that is? I said, yeah, Mom, that's fantastic. That's normal. A normal ejection fraction is 65 to 75%. So do you know that it's normal for your left ventricle not to push all the blood out?
No.
That there's still going to be 25 to 35% full of blood. But that's normal. You're expected to push out 65 to 75%. That is normal and healthy. And my mom has that, and she's 83. Woohoo!
It's so good.
It is good. Yeah. It was such a relief, let me tell you. So
what was the final diagnosis with your mom?
We don't know yet. She has to have more diagnosis. That's because it could be GI and it could be musculoskeletal.
Okay.
If it's not GI, then it's likely that it's musculoskeletal. That's probably what I would be thinking. So anyway, that Hawthorne is shown to improve heart function and heart failure symptoms such as shortness of breath and fatigue. And it's probably the flavonoids because it's strengthening, the flavonoids directly strengthen the heart muscle wall. You have to be careful taking Hawthorne along with other treatments because it can work in the opposite direction. So how can you take Hawthorne? You can use the raw berries. They're tart. They're slightly sweet. And you can eat them directly. You're supposed to not eat the seeds. They do have cyanides. They have cyanide in them, so you don't want to eat the seeds. So it might be better to do Hawthorne jam or Hawthorne solid extract or drink it as tea. You can get Hawthorne tea or make your own by using the flowers and berries and leaves. You can get Hawthorne jam. People often will use Hawthorne berries in jams, pie fillings, and syrups. If you can find Hawthorne jam, that's something you can have. You can put Hawthorne berries in wine and vinegar. You can make Hawthorne wine. And you can also make Hawthorne vinegar. And you could also just get apple cider vinegar and throw some Hawthorne berries into it. And then, of course, you can take pills if you want to. So it's pretty easy to add to your diet. It's very easy to find. You can find it at any health food store. Your naturopathic physician is going to have some. It's very useful. I take the solid extract every day, and the solid extract is concentrated, so I only take a tiny bit, take like a quarter teaspoon a day. People with more serious conditions can take more. You don't want to overdo it because it is a powerful medicine on your heart. I find it very useful, and I think it's helping me with some things that are going on with me. So, all right. So not too many side effects have been reported. It can, if you're already taking blood pressure meds, you have to be careful. Because it can, if you're already taking blood thinners or blood pressure medicines, you have to watch that your blood pressure doesn't go too low or that your blood doesn't get too thin. Hmm. So you want to talk with your naturopath or your cardiovascular doctor for help with that. So let's see, we have just a couple minutes left. Let's talk about amla. So amla, I'm taking that too. So amla is an Ayurvedic herb. Also known as Indian gooseberry. It looks like a gooseberry, little green fruits. And in India, they eat it pickled or candied. And you can get it as a supplement. I take it in pills. And you can get amla complex that has a lot of different herbs in it. So amla is good for immunity, and it has a lot of vitamin C in it. So that's one of the ways that it's helpful. It's good for your liver. It's known to improve liver function. Anything that improves liver function is going to help you get toxins out of your body quicker, which is going to tend to lower your blood pressure. Amla can also be helpful for reducing body weight and improve fatty liver disease. Amla also supports healthy digestion. They gave it to people with GERD, with reflux disorder, and the people with the reflux disorder, it improved their reflux. And it also has antioxidant properties and antidiarrheal properties that it helps calm muscle spasms, which can give you stomach cramps and discomforts, and may also heal stomach ulcers. So that's exciting. It promotes a healthy heart. It's another thing that can help you with your cholesterol. And it can help to reduce your risk of atherosclerosis, helps to lower your triglycerides, total cholesterol, and LDL, and your atherogenic index, which is great. So you're less likely to have atherosclerosis if you take AMLA. It decreases risks of heart disease. And there's some studies that show that AMLA decreases blood pressure. And I looked up to see if there are any herbs that have ARB activity, angiotensin receptor blocking activity, which would be similar to the drugs losartan, olmesartan, all those blood pressure meds that end in sartan. They're angiotensin receptor antagonists. And so angiotensin converting enzyme receptor antagonists. So they block angiotensin from bonding to these receptors that push the renin angiotensin pathway, which ultimately raises your blood pressure. And so if you block the receptor, the angiotensin converting enzyme, or the angiotensin can't bond, and you don't get the whole pathway going along. So you wind up having lower blood pressure. So amla can be really helpful. That's one of the ways that it's helpful. So it's helpful for blood pressure in terms of it reduces atherosclerosis, and it has this possible ARB activity. Amla may increase hair growth and protect against hair loss. And it can do it topically. That they did a study with people that they mixed coconut water and selenium to the hair daily, and they had more hair growth. Then it's good for your kidney health, which is good, because I'm sometimes concerned that that my kidneys are a little bit sluggish, and so amla helps to support kidney health, protects against kidney damage, and preserves kidney function. That's great. So this is, I'm going to be taking this for, you know, for a while.
For the duration.
Yeah, for the duration. yes, antioxidants in the kidney. And there are studies that they need to study it a little bit more. So you can make amla juice at home. You can get gooseberries and juice it in your blender. And you can also get pre-made amla juice online and at specialty stores. I wonder if you went to an Indian grocery if you'd be able to find amla juice.
You might.
So there you go. So that's what we're going to talk about this week. I may talk a little bit about atherosclerosis next week, and then get into spinal stenosis after that. But we're going to let you go, and we're going to wish you a wonderful 4th of July weekend and 4th of July celebration, however you celebrate. And to all my Canadian friends, I hope you had a great Canada Day yesterday, and I hope you get to enjoy some fireworks. And if you are going to do fireworks and you have pets that are upset by them, make sure that they get to stay in an area where they don't have to listen to the fireworks, with soothing music, earphones if they need them, because it can be very upsetting to certain pets.
Headphones for your pet?
Yes, because they get scared. Or you could give them a weighted, they have weighted vests for pets as well.
Oh my goodness.
Some pets get very upset by fireworks. It's a thing.
Yeah.
So anyway, I hope you enjoy your 4th of July. And if you're going to the Boombox Parade, Ron and I will see you there. You have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You can also leave questions or comments at my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on this show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS stores, and WHUS.org.